ever going to be canceled.
I can't believe this.
I think this might have something to do with me.
That is how this business works.
It shouldn't be that way.
They gave a men's wrestling show our slot.
So you just let them do whatever they want?
No.
Woo! Let's start this show!
Welcome to Cord Killers, our mission to report the intel from the front lines of the cord-cutting revolution so you, my friends, have the information you need to be able to watch what you want, when you want, where you want, on whatever damn device you choose. I'm Tom Merritt.
Hey, man, I'm Brian Brushwood, and more importantly, those were the gorgeous ladies of wrestling coming back with season two with their potty mouths. So apparently it's fine. The robot dispensing cocaine, fine. They drop an F-bomb, and you're like, uh-oh.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, because it's an audio show.
The misogyny, everything about the 80s, that's all fine.
Okay, oh, I mean, yeah, no, not condoning the 80s for anything, except... Well, I wasn't born in the 80s. No, I'm not condoning the 80s for
right
anything.
On. Yeah, not your responsibility.
No more 80s.
Hey, man, we're in the same place at the same time in the same studio. That's pretty wild.
It's weird. We're standing next to each other, which we've never done.
Yeah, so normally in this space, we've always configured two different computers, two different directions, and then we had to mirror one of us. But since you relayed all of this out, we get to be like news anchors.
Yeah.
You want to run down the sports scores?
Well, let's take a look at what the local Bulldogs did this week against the Highland Comets. All right. No.
The primary target.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, you had a great setup. It was a perfect setup. How did you miss that?
Well, what's funnier than a dog riding a bicycle? HBO has ordered a pilot of a Game of Thrones spinoff from writer, producer, showrunner Jane Goldman. If you're like, wait, Jane Goldman, that sounds familiar. Wrote scripts or co-wrote for Stardust, Kick-Ass, X-Men First Class, X-Men Days of Future Past, The Woman in Black, Kingsman, Kingsman the Golden Circle. Fair to say Jane Goldman has done some work.
Knows what she's doing.
Yeah, knows what she's about. And she is the first of the HBO pilots to get greenlit. Remember, they threw a bunch of spaghetti against the wall and said, whatever sticks, we'll go with. And hers is the first spaghetti to stick.
Dude, that's great. And so to be clear, this is not Dunkin' Egg. This is not The Hedge Knight or any of the established properties that he's written in that universe.
This is set in the... I'm glad, that's right, Brian. It is totally like TV news. It is set in the Age of Heroes that began with the pact signed between the Children of the Forest. If you watch Game of Thrones, those are the short people that Bran runs into. They are the original inhabitants of the continent of Westeros. So the Children of the Forest and the invading First Men, and the First Men being like Starks and stuff. So this is well before Westeros. We're talking like no Church of the Seven, no any of the Targaryens, nothing.
Right. I think I love this idea, and I think that most importantly, HBO has shown by being the money people who make the decisions to hire the right talented people, they've been extraordinary stewards of this property. And I think I'm very, very excited. They have so much trust in my book. Game of Thrones was the first property I've ever experienced. I'll take that back. Lord of the Rings, then Game of Thrones. Yeah. Only two properties that I could make a credible argument for the movie being better than the book.
Now, we're not going to go from the signing of the pact, it sounds like. The log line describes it going from the world's descent from the Golden Age of Heroes into its darkest hour. So the end of the Age of Heroes is when we get the White Walkers. So we're going to be headed towards the appearance of the White Walkers. Or creation, even.
I don't want to draw uncomfortable parallels, but this sounds structurally very similar to the prequels. This sounds like...
Because we know where we're going.
There was an old republic, and everything was great and beautiful and refined and elegant, a golden age, and then there was a descent into awfulness.
Well, I think the problem with prequels can be setting it too far into the good stuff. You really got to start with the descent. And if I were to make bets, what would work here? I have no idea what Jane Goldman's going to do. What would work here would be, let's start it with the falling apart of the pact.
Yeah.
So how many years back? The creation of the White Walkers. Because what's not suspenseful is, and in the end, it was the White Walkers. Because everybody who's seen Game of Thrones knows they exist.
Right.
So it's got to start with, like, White Walkers have just been created. Why?
Right.
And then, like, how is this going to pull people apart? Who's going to side with whom? You have to get people invested in characters right away and not have the premise based on something you already know is going to happen.
That's a smart thing, is as fast as you can, eliminate the itch for the lingering questions that you know are going to show up. Like,
yeah.
And we even saw that Solo came out, and I enjoyed Solo, but there definitely was this, like, when's Lando showing up? When are we going to see Chewbacca?
When's he win the Millennium Falcon?
Exactly, yeah. Right? But the faster you can get past all of that, you open up that beautiful, beautiful moment. And we've talked about this on the show before. There's nothing I adore more than when I hit a moment in a movie that I now know nothing from the trailers, and I'm genuinely like, well, I suppose anything can happen starting now.
Yeah. George R. R. Martin helped brainstorm ideas, and he'll get a producer credit and a story by credit because the whole world is his story. But he will not be active in the series if you're worried about him spending time on the series. Which is
It's so weird. Like, the TV series is so good and so satisfying that I was one of the loudest, like, stop blogging about NFL. Stop talking about your pub crawls. Just write the books. While you're still alive.
Don't do anything but stay home, chained to your desk, and write the... No.
All of that is gone now. All of that is... I'm just happy that the movies or the television show exists. And you know what? Tom, I'd hate to say it. There's a chance I might not run out and buy the new books the moment they come out.
Interesting. I will, for sure, go, and because I want to compare, but I definitely feel that lack of urgency.
I mean, I'll get around to it. Let me be clear. Yeah, yeah. I'll get around to it. But, you know, for example, right now I'm in the middle of rereading the Gentleman Bastard series.
Right.
And if that George R. R. Martin next book happened, I was like, I'll get to that. Mm-hmm. Just give me a month to get through this other stuff.
Well, this series isn't necessarily going to happen yet. They have to shoot a pilot next year. If it gets a series order, then it would likely air in 2020 or 2021. So it's going to be a while before we even see this. There are still other pilot pitches in the Game of Thrones universe being considered. Max Borenstein of Kong Skull Island has one. Brian Helgerland of Legend has one. Carly Rae, who works on Westworld, has one. And Brian Cogman, who works on Game of Thrones, has one. We don't know the details of what those are, but those are still out there. Keep in mind, though, HBO's Casey Bloys previously told The Hollywood Reporter, quote, "My sense right now is we would be very lucky if one of these rises to the level that we have set. Now, theoretically, what if they're all great? That's a high-class problem that I'll solve when it comes to that. But knowing what we know about the development process, that's why we wanted to increase our odds. I do not see a scenario where we have more than one." So he's expecting out of these five pitches, one to turn into an actual series on HBO.
Wait, to be an actual series or to be an actual series as good as...
No, to be a series that meets their... Nothing else will exist. To say, he's like, we've got a level of expectation of what it has to be to become a series on HBO. We'd be surprised if more than one meets.
Man, I'll tell you what, at this point, HBO has a, I would say, fairly universally, largely successful ability when it comes to curation and development of original properties, 30, 40 years now?
Yeah.
I trust them. I trust them in a way that I don't think any other network.
Down on Fraggle Rock.
So if you were to pick... Like your trusted network, is there anybody that beats or even matches HBO? FX is close.
And AMC are the only ones that even that I set next to them. Right. Netflix would if they didn't cast their net so wide.
Correct.
Because they do HBO level series.
Right.
But then they also are like, yeah, but we also do crap. And they're
we've identified there are 75,000 teenagers that would love this.
Yeah. I mean, they're honest about it. So I wouldn't put them beside that because not every single thing they make is.
This is a great question to kick out to the audience. Mm-hmm. Cornkillers@gmail.com. Is there, besides, we'll call the trinity, HBO, AMC, and FX, and they've all had their bombs.
Sure.
But in general,
and HBO has
too. I trust them, right?
Yeah. No, absolutely. I'd say HBO still leads out of those three for me. How about you? All right. What we also need from you is support.
And money.
Well, one way to support us is with money. That's the easy way. Look, if you're like, hold on, what do you want to borrow my truck to move? Yes. But you could also just give us a dollar.
Yeah. In fact, just $1 an episode. That's all we ask for. Head on over to patreon.com/cordkillers. And when you become a Patreon, not only do you get the ineffable quality of feeling smug and superior, you're going to go into the next party feeling taller than everybody else. You're like, oh, are you a patron of the arts? I didn't think so. I sure am. I support Cord Killers, independent creators. They're the next generation. Look into them. Read it up. It's on a little thing called the internet. But you'll also get tangible benefits, including the ability to listen to not only our show and then immediately spoiler in time earlier than everybody else, but the newly created After Talk segment where we talk shop and you get to hang out for another, we promised like 5 to 10 minutes, but they've definitely been like 30 minute conversations that we're doing. I don't want
it ranges. Yeah, just like real friends.
Exactly. We're going to hang out longer, better. We're going to be closer, and we're going to love you more. That's the real benefit.
That's true. And all you have to do is go to patreon.com/cordkillers if you haven't already. Thanks to everybody who has. You guys keep us running so that we can tell you how to watch. And some of that Patreon money will be going to a Fire TV Cube so I can try it out. The Fire TV Cube supports Amazon's Assistant just like the Fire TV Stick and Fire TV Box, but it acts like a full-featured Echo device. So the other Fire TV Sticks support voice recognition.
Right.
This one has the 8 microphones built in with the far field array, supports for all the skills in the Amazon Echo skill store, so you can have flash briefings and everything. The only thing it can't do that an Amazon Echo can do would be the voice messages and the calling. It for some reason doesn't have that, and Amazon hasn't even ruled it out like completely from ever happening, but they didn't add that. Everything else you can do with an Echo, you can do with this, and it's $120. It was on sale briefly for Prime users for $90 last week. But now it's going to ship on June 21st for $120.
I'm really surprised that they would withhold that capability. And I'd be really interested to know why. Maybe it's because if I'm being imaginative, I would imagine that there would be like a legal problem with putting an Amazon Echo device, a device that was capable of making phone calls, next to, on purpose, a device that you do not have control of that can speak words that will trigger an Alexa device.
Maybe.
For example.
Yeah. I don't even know if it's a legal thing, just a, like, you know, that's a bad idea thing.
Wait, well, right. Like, for example, like, what if some kids are watching TV, you're not there, and a commercial runs, and then it speaks the A word, and then says, call 1-900,
yeah, right.
Blah, 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 and then, like, that's because there's no technological reason. It's not like that's a difficult service to enable.
Although there might be, I don't know. There might be some technological reasons. I don't rule that out. There may be less power under the hood, and there's some part of the chip dedicated to routing calls that they didn't want to include. I don't know. I think it's probably more to do with use case situations like you're talking about, where they're like, you know what, we don't want to support that in a situation where there's other things that can happen. The Amazon Echo goes in places where phones go. The Fire TV Box is not meant to go there.
Speaking of Fire Echo TV devices, Cube, this rather, is a case. Say. Think about how differently this exact same opportunity and exact same situation is approached by Google versus Amazon. So what Google did is they said, look, all people want is the thing on the big screen. So let's just make the smallest device we can and give people the ability. You know, everybody has a phone. Let's just give them the ability to whatever it is they're watching, put it on the big screen or whatever. You would think that, okay, smaller's better.
Cheaper's better.
We were excited about individual, you know, Fire Sticks and all that stuff. But instead, this is a weird case that going bigger, I think, will actually make it better because of the full functionality of it being an Echo device.
It'll do some of the things that the Amazon Echo Show, which is the one with the screen, will do, but on your television.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
so it'll play videos and show the weather and stuff like that.
I have an Echo Dot Spot, the one with the circle thing.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, I tried just for grins, like, you know, play this movie that I have. I told my Spot to play Logan, and it looked very weird with letterbox black bars on the top and bottom and rounded on the edges because it was playing in a circle. So I'm going to imagine that's going to be a lot more useful. if you can do that on the big screen. But this is a case where by making it another version of the Echo,
full of functional Echo. It's a bummer about the phone calls thing, but that's okay. I think it enters a different category, a fundamentally different category than anything else that I've experienced. I don't even think of it as a video streaming device. I don't think of it as anything except for, like, that's convenient because I just can call out the things I want to see on there.
Yeah, and then that's the other side of it, which is why maybe the messaging and voice calls is just more trouble than it's worth. People may not care about it. That may be their research is like, you know, this is barely popular on the Echo. Let's just not bother, because what we want to push is this is controlling your TV with your voice. So the Cube supports something called CEC over HDMI, which is kind of a nightmare if you have an older TV to figure out if it works, because it's implemented in different ways and you have to have the right HDMI cable. But if it does, that means you can say, hey, Fire TV Cube, turn on the television, and it will. And from there, you can tell it to do pretty much anything. Like, I want to watch Handmaid's Tale on Hulu, and it'll launch Hulu on the Cube, and it'll go to the Handmaid's Tale for you. They're even including a multi-directional IR blaster in case you don't have the CEC in your HDMI, so you could have it turn on the TV through infrared. That also helps it work with cable TV boxes so that you can say, tune it to channel, you know, 183 for AMC, and it will actually control your cable TV box if you still have cable TV.
I'm going to bet, if not out of the box, then very, very shortly, it will eliminate one of those steps. You will not have to say, turn on my TV. You will just say, hey, I want to watch Westworld. And it will know whether or not the television is off or on.
I mean, it might do that right now.
Correct. Yeah. So and then just make it all happen. I'll tell you what. Amazon is making a really interesting play with the different versions of the same device, because they've very clearly positioned the Dot belongs next to your computer in the office. The Spot very clearly belongs in the bedroom as an alarm clock. The main Echo clearly belongs in the kitchen where anybody can shout at it. And this is the version of it that goes in your living room by your television.
Yeah.
It's a really smart strategy. I think they're crushing it with all this.
In fact, I'm pretty sure it does what you're talking about, because in a demo, Amazon had it say, Alexa, I'm home. Turned on the home theater, turned the lights down in your room.
Got the whole place ready
you can set up these profiles. So
the only thing is, I assume for these profiles, you have to be the one to sort of set up your own program. I think very quickly we're going to get to an interview stage where it's just like, hey, it is now a good time. I just need 7 minutes.
The Amazon Echo Home does that.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
They're like, how bright do you like it?
It just scans your, I mean, not quite as intense as you're talking about, but it scans your home network. It's like, hey, I found the LifeX bulb. Do you want me to call this one living room? And then you're like, yep. And then done.
Yeah.
And then from then on, you're like, turn on the living room lights, and it turns it on.
Well, and plus also, I love the idea that they'll know how long the interview will take, and they'll say, is now a good time? And you're like, no. You're like, would tomorrow be okay? Or I don't know. They can figure out, like, now that we have behavioral sciences that allow us to figure out exactly how annoyed we can get before we just throw our hands up and refuse to do a task, I guarantee you they're going to look at those research papers and use that as a basis for how they handle all that
stuff. Yeah, so one thing it can do, you can say, like, hey, I want to watch ESPN, and it'll say PlayStation View or Hulu Live.
Right.
And you'll be like, oh, PlayStation View, that's the one I subscribe
to. And they can even say, you know, down the road, like, hey, it's been the fourth time you've asked for this, and you've always said PlayStation View. Do you want me to stop asking? Like, this is...
And then you say, no, because I'm very lonely, and you're the only conversation I've had all day.
In which she says, calling the suicide prevention hotline right now.
That's a little much. You ask a couple more questions.
We're like, I would call the suicide prevention hotline, except for I'm connected to your TV and I don't have.
I can't call anything. Yeah exactly. All right, let's talk about what to watch in Under Surveillance.
Not like this, hey, it's all about location.
Under Surveillance.
So Netflix's controversial teen drama 13 Reasons Why is returning for a third season in 2019, but Netflix gave no reasons why. The show, if you remember, centers around a young woman who commits suicide, and a box of cassette tapes reveal 13 reasons why she decided to do so. It's been very controversial because of that. Some people saying, no, it treats with honesty the situation of suicide, and that's going to help prevent it more than if it, you know, tried to deny it. Anyway, at Netflix's annual investor meeting, CEO Reed Hastings said, 13 Reasons Why has been enormously popular and successful. It's engaging content. It is controversial, but nobody has to watch it.
Man, that's a really...
Those are Reed Hastings' words, not mine.
I just short-circuited because I can't figure out, I had not considered the moral obligations of the artist. Is it a moral obligation of the artist? And, you know, let's be generous and call Netflix, you know, as a funder of the arts.
Sure.
Granted, they're going to make a profit on it.
A patron.
You know, theoretically, museums, you know, are profitable entities and so on. But they have a artistic decision to fund or not fund different types of content. And is there, we're talking about human lives here. And that really does weigh differently. I hadn't even really considered this. Do you have like a gut check instinct on this?
I lean towards okay. We usually as humans overreact to causality, right? 13 Reasons Why, because it shows a suicide, doesn't prove that it's going to cause one.
Sure.
Right. And in fact, that's why the argument is to some people like, no, the way they're handling it actually shows, it doesn't glamorize it. It shows the real reason. Other people are like, I don't know. I think it glamorizes it. And that becomes a subjective thing. At the point where you can't make a call and say, yes, it's absolutely glamorizing it, therefore it's absolutely bad, I back out and like, I don't have enough information to say you shouldn't do it.
And I think, okay, so I think I do have a take now that you said that, because what I am in favor of natural experiments that can lead us to a place that betters humanity. So as a result, there are oftentimes some counterintuitive artifacts that occur. For example, the rise of violent video games in the 90s largely corresponded to a
wiping out of all children.
No, to a decrease in violent crime. I'm sure there are plenty of you know, depending on which area, what situation,
and
or whatever.
Correlated, right? You use the word correlated.
Correct.
People.
Correlated, not cause. And so now, I for one am thankful that we have this natural data set as a result of this natural experiment. And it is theorized by some that by getting the fantasy out, you know, and so on. Yeah. Same thing with the rise of pornography I want to say that there's fewer rapes. I don't know. That's a shifting thing. But what if by having this show down the road, and we won't know now, we won't know 5 years from now, but 20 years from now, they might be able to look and say, this deep dive exploration in an artistic format about the phenomenon of suicide has, you know, now in the year 2035, we can declare has saved 70,000 lives of people who otherwise might have killed themselves, that we estimate would have, you know, that is the correlated drop or whatever. But I guess the point is we don't know. So I think I'm happy to support anything that increases the data set that we have to work with.
Also, when we think about these things, we sometimes automatically assume a laboratory setting, right? Like Netflix shows 13 Reasons Why and all teenagers watch it. And that's it.
Right.
And it's like, well,
that's not what happens.
They don't watch it all the way through. They don't pay attention close. There are other shows and movies on Netflix about suicide.
Correct.
And so it is in the context of like, okay, I saw 13 Reasons Why take, maybe I'll watch this other movie, maybe, you know, and there are other things on Netflix that they may go, you know what? That made me want to watch this really silly, happy cartoon over
what
here.
What if, now this is a weird, creepy thing, like, and this will be a good outcome for it, and it's totally hypothetical, but what if, you know, we talk about the Netflix algorithm and how good it is. What if Netflix notices you watch 13 Reasons Why and working with you know, law enforcement and suicide prevention, they're able to figure out, okay, people watch this and then they watch this and then they watch this. There is mm-hmm. like, this seems to be the catcher in the rye that unusually,
that would be interesting if they did that.
Correlates with it, and we can do something for these people because we have their phone number and we can do something to help them and help save lives.
We're starting to go down a road that's well beyond the scope of the expertise of the show and its host, but
correct.
My guess is if you talk to someone in suicide prevention, it's usually not a TV show that caused someone to commit suicide.
Correct. Usually they are, for example, the Columbine kids played Doom and you know, that kind of stuff.
It's usually like much, much more intense emotional, physical, situational reasons. And watching a TV show or not is just a thing that's going to happen along the way. And yes. taking away the TV show won't prevent it. That's the other side. Is taking away this show going to prevent suicides?
excellent points. Also, I realized that I randomly went to the suicide prevention hotline joke before knowing that this was our next story. That's amazing.
Yeah. Netflix has obtained the rights to the film Dolomite Is My Name, which is in production. It's a biopic about singer and actor Rudy Ray Moore, produced by and starring Eddie Murphy. Production is scheduled to begin on June 12th. So it's not actually in production. It'll be in production tomorrow. But Dolomite was Rudy Ray Moore's alter ego, and there were blaxploitation films that are cult hits around the character Dolomite. So this is a biopic about him and making those movies.
This is one of those weird things where I know the name and I never saw any of the content or material. The way I still am with stuff like Superfly or Shaft up until I saw Shaft.
And what I love is it's Eddie Murphy, which is a huge talent, coming to Netflix to do something really interesting.
I think
just coming to Netflix. End of story.
Both HBO and Netflix made that really, really smart call. Same with FX as well. That they're like artists like things. They like money. But they also like other things. For example, freedom is a currency. Yeah. For example, you know, a platform is a currency, that kind
of
stuff.
Barry Jenkins is going to direct 11 episodes of a series based on the alternate history book, The Underground Railroad, for Amazon. It's a story about a young slave girl named Cora and her daring escape from a cotton plantation in Georgia through an underground railroad. Now, part of the history of this is that there are actual railroads underground.
I was about to say, that sounds like actual history, not alternate history.
It's expected to premiere sometime in 2019.
Oh man, fantastic. I'm really looking forward to this one.
And Dolly Parton's going to produce and star in an 8-episode anthology series for Netflix based around her songs. She'll also serve as singer and songwriter for extra songs as part of the series.
Can I tell you what a remarkable experience it was to be in the Smoky Mountains of Tennessee?
Yep.
Where we went to Gatlinburg, Dollywood and all that. Does that part of the world deservedly just adore everything about Dolly Parton?
Yeah, and I spent Christmas there once.
Oh, right on.
Not in Dollywood, but in Gatlinburg.
I was in the same area.
Amazon signed a deal to get first look at any new TV series developed by Jordan Peele's Monkey Paw Productions. Amazon already has ordered a drama called The Hunt and a documentary series about Lorena Bobbitt from Monkey Paw, but now everything Monkey Paw develops, they'll have to show to Amazon first. Not have to. It's the thing they want to do. They'll show it to Amazon, and Amazon will get to say yes or no, and then they get to shop it around from there. They have a similar deal with Universal for films coming out of Monkey Paw.
Smart move on Amazon's part, and my guess is an affordable move, because the farther out, the less real a thing gets, the cheaper the cost to, say, first dibs gets, right?
Yeah, I don't know how these deals work with First Look, because nobody would sign them if they're like, well, we'll make a lot less money doing this. So there must be some balancing factor to that. Yeah.
But
like maybe there's a guaranteed minimum or something.
Yeah, no. Oh, you know, you're right. So it's like buying an option in the stock market.
Yeah,
it's just like, we'll get it and we'll get it at a more affordable price than we otherwise would get.
Amazon struck a deal to exclusively live stream 20 Premier League football games with 10 matches over one bank holiday and another 10 during one midweek fixture program for 3 seasons starting in 2019. We won't go into all of it, but a listener of Daily Tech News Show was nice enough to explain they sell Premier League in packages. So the bank holiday games are a package and the midweek games are a package. And so Amazon's getting some of these packages. Terms of the deal weren't disclosed, but Amazon said the matches would be available to UK Prime Video members at no extra cost. So they're just going to put it as part of the Prime Video subscription.
So these are the early days here, but their end play has to be that they are a go-to destination to watch this kind of content. And it's really weird to watch the mushy middle early days, because nobody thinks sports and they're like, well, let me just turn on the old Amazon.com, you know?
I tell you, this one scenario that may or may not be the way this ends up working that has really worked well for me is ESPN Plus, that silly $3 a month add-on. I did it to test it out. And on Apple TV, you can say, tell me when my favorite teams are playing, and it will give you a little pop-up, even if you're watching something else, that says, hey, Cardinals are about to start.
Over here.
Or Cardinals are in a real tight game right at the end if you want to switch over. Mm-hmm. And so we went to the Apple TV the other day to watch something. We saw on the TV strip at the top that the NBA final was happening. So I turned it on, and without realizing, the NBA finals broadcast on ABC, but ESPN Plus had the ability to digitally stream it.
Okay. ABC might not be the best example because they're owned by the same stuff. Do they heads up when it's a competing network?
But it's a broadcast thing, right? That used to be like, well, if it's on broadcast,
right, there's broadcast,
it doesn't matter digital, if it's the same company, right? So this is not something that's on ESPN. Or what I would not think that I would be able to normally get ABC stuff in the ESPN app, but I could get it on ESPN Plus, and it alerted me to it. The biggest part of what I'm saying is that it alerted me to it here, and I probably would have forgot it was on because I'm not a big NBA fan. Mm-hmm. I watched the beginning of the game, and I was like, okay, now let's watch something else. So we watched a movie, and then right at the end of the movie, we got the thing flash up and say, hey, that game is almost over. Do you want to watch the end? And so we watch the end of the final.
That's great. That is a great step. I would love to know whether or not they did the truly unexpected thing of, or if they decide to in the future do the truly unexpected thing of letting you know about a sports event that is happening on a network that they do not own, that they do not control,
well,
that they do not.
Apple would.
Right, correct.
So, the whole reason I brought the point up was not about ESPN, but like I subscribe to a thing. And it told me that that thing was happening. So if I said, hey, one of these Premier League teams, you know, Newcastle is my favorite team and Newcastle is playing on Amazon Prime Video, it would have been like, hey, you want to launch Prime Video?
Right.
If Prime Video was part of the Apple system, that's where it starts to break down.
Got it. But, yeah. Got it. So in other words, just as the DVR sort of freed us from even knowing when our favorite show came out on what day of the week or what time or whatever, this could be the kind of thing where it doesn't matter where stuff is happening. It's all in the ecosystem and you'll go to a counterintuitive place like Amazon because it's going to say, heads up, we got to deal with
this. And where this system doesn't work is, actually, Prime Video is part of the Apple TV system, but Netflix isn't.
Got it.
All right, let's talk about what we're watching. Brian, what are you watching?
My own live Night Attack shows.
That's not narcissistic.
In San Diego and Los Angeles. It's been a busy, busy weekend. So as a result, I did watch this morning. I watched our latest episode of Deadwood. I watched Westworld. We'll talk about those. But quick high five to Bryce Neshcom Castillo for running everything, for all that, for Justin Robert Young for arranging those shows, for all of Diamond Club for coming out and meeting in person. Both of them, one of them completely sold out, the other one 90% sold out. Just a total blast. What a great time.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I didn't get to go to the San Diego one, but I went to the LA one last night. And thank you to everybody who came up and said hello. You guys are the best, and we love every single one of you. I watched that because I was there.
Yep.
But I also watched The Expanse. Are you you're behind on The Expanse?
I think I'm like four or five episodes behind. Is this the end of this season?
No, it's getting close to the end.
Okay, I will do my red letter best to get all the way caught up.
Watching this has made me realize something about these novels, which I guess I kind of knew, but I hadn't thought about it much. This is the part of the story that they're covering on TV where I fell in love with this crew in the book.
Oh,
this is
wonderful.
Where, like, I'm watching every episode these past 3 weeks, like smiling, like, oh, right, this is it. Oh, and then that. Oh, and then she does that.
Are they realizing it as good as it was? And you
like,
remember it?
And like, suddenly the universe is blooming, and like, oh, this is what this story is about. I thought it was about, you know, the battle between Mars and Earth, which it kind of is, but there's this other, like, all of the stuff that then will make you care about everything that happens from now on is happening right now in these episodes.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. Well, I'm really, really excited to hear that. So this is a giddy thumbs up. At this point, now we had our opinions early on watching The Expanse. Would you say better or less than Battlestar Galactica at this point? As far as greatest sci-fi.
I mean, I'm caught up in the moment right now. Yeah. I would say better.
Yeah.
We'll see after the season ends and I've had a little time to calm down, if I still feel that way. But to me, it feels better because the story is going to keep getting better. You're going to keep being invested in these characters even more. And the adventures that they're probably going to go on, if they follow the book, are going to be so interesting and so tied into everything that happens now. Whereas in Battlestar, the best stuff is the first season.
Then
it's like kind of a slow glide
it's still pretty good. Yeah, right on.
All right, Bryce, what do we be on the lookout for?
Hey, we got a letter from Paul. Paul writes, hello, killers. Paul from Dayton here. Just wanted to recommend a series I came across recently on Amazon Prime called Comrade Detective. The series is built as a lost show from 1980s Romania, recently discovered by Channing Tatum and dubbed for Western audiences. The voices for the dubbing are provided by a fairly star-studded cast, including Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Nick Offerman, Jenny Slate, Chloe Sevigny, Rutger Hauer, and Channing Tatum himself. The show itself is a fairly straightforward buddy cop adventure in which two Romanian police detectives are investigating the murder of their senior officer's partner and in the process stumble into a vast international conspiracy. For those who pay attention to the very beginning of the series, there are secrets even as early as that. The show never actually really existed. The show was written in English and then translated to Romanian and then filmed with Romanian stars in Romanian and then dubbed over.
Oh my gosh.
What a brilliant way to make it very, very cost effective. That's brilliant.
It's a parody of Russian-American propaganda, like Red Dawn. But it's the opposite. So everyone here is a communist, and they all watch chess on TV. And, I only got to watch about a half of the first episode, but this is a fun little thing, and it's only like 6 episodes. So I think it's worth checking out at least the concept. That's Comrade Detective on Amazon Prime.
That's awesome. So the joke doesn't wear out its welcome, I would assume, with only 6 episodes.
Yeah, I would think so. It actually starts off a little more subtle than you would expect, but it's there's a good premise here, and yeah, I don't think it will overstay its welcome with 6.
Excellent. Oh, I forgot to mention the movie that I was watching in between the NBA final was The Post. Tom Hanks and Meryl Streep.
Did you like
about
it?
The Pentagon Papers. Loved it. I'm a big fan of that Nixon era stuff anyway. And
did you enjoy it more for the movie storytelling or for the age that it took place?
I definitely loved it for the age, but I liked the way they told this story. It's very easy for these kinds of stories to give Tom Hanks a preachy moment as Ben Bradley about the freedom of the press. They verged on that a couple of times, but they actually really focused on Katharine Graham and her inexperience and her trepidation and the fact that she really thought, well, I could go to jail for doing this.
Wow.
But and all of the investors, all of the white men investors saying, no, Katharine, really, you don't want to do this. Like, it's just a really bad idea. There's no winning here. And Ben Bradley, the only voice in her ear, saying the opposite. And she does it.
Wow.
And she wins and in the Supreme Court. And press freedom in the United States was not the same afterwards.
And it all turned out great after that.
Exactly. There's never been any more problems since then. I can't tell if I think it's cute or stupid, but they ended with kind of almost a post-credit scene. It's in the movie. It's not post-credits, but it's almost
like
the Nixon expanded universe because they end with a security guard at the Watergate Hotel finding an open door.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah.
But it is the Washington Post that breaks that story too. So
sure.
And the implication is if they hadn't fought for the Pentagon Papers right to publish, they may not have ever broke the Watergate story.
Sure.
Yeah. All right. Also, shout out to Terrace House, which we've been watching a lot. Eileen's been watching a lot of that. And Bryce has been a big proponent of that on this show. And it's really fun to watch, I have to say. Got something we should be on the lookout for? Email us cordkillers@gmail.com.
Hey, you know, Tom, we support ourselves a number of different ways.
We do.
Congratulations. I got this email today that I guess your Inkshares book is going to happen.
It's going to happen. There's going to be an Audible version of it. And in fact, I sent the manuscript in today.
Congratulations!
That doesn't mean you'll get the book before next year, because it takes a long time for these things to work through. But yeah, no, it's definitely going to happen. And big thanks to everybody who pre-ordered Trigger on tomsnewbook.com. And huge thanks to people who are still ordering it, even after it funded. You guys are the best.
So I got a question. The way Inkshares does their thing, maybe this will turn out to be an ad for Inkshares. But obviously, they get you in the door with Audible, and you get legit publishing and all of that stuff. It's going to show up in bookstores. Do they also provide like an editor?
Yeah.
No, it's great. So all the benefits of
it's
real.
It's exactly like Simon & Schuster or Random House from this point on. The only difference is they pick things to publish based on, did we get 750 pre-orders? Yeah. Then we publish it. But yeah, they'll, and I know this from going through it with Pilot X, they'll assign a professional editor who will work with me on the content. They'll assign a line editor to like catch copy mistakes and spelling errors. They'll create a promotional marketing plan. They'll book appearances on radio and podcasts and the whole nine yards.
Yeah. That is fantastic. I'm so excited. On a separate thing, I actually want to promote something I don't do, which is all of, or I, something I don't own, which is all of the podcasts that I've been appearing on lately.
Yeah.
I showed up on the Rooster Teeth podcast. Got to hang out with Bernie. And when I showed up, they were like, yeah, there's going to be another guest on. He's an author. He wrote some movies. His name's C. Robert Cargill. He wrote Doctor Strange. I was like, you got to be kidding me.
You're like, the C. Robert Cargill of Chips Bitch?
It's great, dude. It's a great podcast.
That's fantastic.
Take a listen to that.
Yeah.
And just last night, I recorded on the Small Beans Podcast Network. Michael Swaim is a Crack.com alum. And he does a show called One Upsmanship, all about video games. So look for that when it comes out.
Excellent. All right, let's move on to the front lines.
Front lines.
DirecTV Now has launched its DVR feature in beta on the Roku. If you're a DirecTV Now fan who's been waiting for the DVR to come to the Roku, it's there on the boxes and the smart TVs. If you're a subscriber, you get 20 hours of recording for 30 days as part of your existing subscription. Or if you need more than that, you can choose to pay $10 more per month. That extends you to 100 hours and 90 days.
How do you think they're doing in terms of... I assume their long-term strategy is to shift everyone over from, you know, receiving stuff in giant bowls taped to the side of their house to just getting everything over the internet.
I wouldn't put it that way. I would imagine their strategy is, well, we know there's only so much longer that people are going to bother paying for giant bowls to be strapped to their house.
Yeah.
We'll keep that business humming as long as we can.
Right.
But in the meantime, let's crank this other engine up so that we don't just die when people stop wanting to do that.
You think they don't have any agenda on the time schedule? They're like, look, we know where things are headed. Let's just have a foot in each of these bowls.
I feel like they probably do have an idea of the time schedule, but their intention is to keep both of them as high as long as possible. Yeah.
Meanwhile, Netflix and Penguin Random House has a series of Stranger Things books, which will include a prequel about Eleven's mom. Stranger Things World Turned Upside Down, starting this autumn. There will also be a young adult gift book with more books coming this year. Dude, the only thing that I'm not seeing that I would love to see is a Stranger Things Choose Your Own Adventure book. How great would that be?
Things or Stranger Things?
You're suddenly the random sixth friend who moves into a town next door and you meet
funny.
These guys.
I like that. I take this as one of those. We used to talk about milestones along the road. We're kind of down the road so far. We don't talk about them as much, but I feel like this is a milestone for Netflix, and maybe it's partly because they own Miller World, but I kind of figure like not, because it's Penguin Random House. They're like, oh, we have a franchise that is as popular as Star Trek or Doctor Who or Warcraft or these other properties that get serialized and turned into novels.
Yeah, as long as there's hunger for an expanded universe, then hopefully there'll be publishers that are willing to fund it.
Peter Jackson has said he will not be the showrunner for Amazon's Lord of the Rings series. He says, I don't have experience in TV. I'm a film guy. It's a whole different skill set. However, he is helping Amazon put the production crew together, so he has some involvement.
That's probably the exact right level of involvement, because my guess is what they really want is Peter Jackson's, outright endorsement, certainly his blessing and his vague association with it, and the public acknowledgement that look, you know, we are very much trying to capture the magic from these movies and put them in a TV form.
Yeah.
That's a good way to keep him involved.
On the most practical side, let's say, I know this is going to be, you know, prequel and not covering Lord of the Rings era stuff, but let's say you needed a hobbit in a hobbit house. Who are you going to call? But like, hey, who knows how to do Hobbit stuff? You're going to call Peter Jackson and be like, who's your Hobbit house guys? Can you put them on the case?
Here's some behind the scenes real Hollywood stuff is what will happen is that phone call will be, he will not say, well, first you lay down a layer of grass.
Right.
What he'll say is like, well, when we did it, I talked to so-and-so. There were three guys on the team. This guy's probably he was the one that was most dialed in and really loves this stuff. Talk to him. But when it comes to the logistics for these giant epic battle scenes, there are five guys we worked with. This one I felt like was the most dialed in, and he brought the energy that I think will match best for what you're trying to do.
And what it sounds like happened is Amazon was like, great, could we just sign you on to put together all these crews? That'd be great. Awesome. Thanks. You don't have to run the show.
There's a value to doing that,
yeah,
right?
Totally.
Where it's like, No. Write me a check and I'll get you all my friends' phone numbers and I'll put together the team. Facebook announced on Wednesday it would offer news programs from various publishers this year on its watch platform, including shows hosted by Anderson Cooper at CNN, Shepard Smith of Fox News, and is it Jorge Ramos of Univision? In an effort to improve the quality
French
of news.
The French version of
wait, did I say it wrong?
No, I don't know.
Okay.
It just sounded kind of French to me.
It's Univision?
Univision, yeah. I think you can just say Univision.
Okay, Univision.
If you're speaking English.
All right. In an effort to improve the quality of news, the shows would be original to Facebook and would launch in the coming months with ad breaks, said Campbell Brown, Facebook's head of global news partnerships. This is one of those weird things where it's like, do we want random corporations deciding what to feed us the facts are. But at some point, Facebook wants to make money. They acknowledge, they're at least seeming to acknowledge that they have a huge problem of creating these bubble realities for people and that that is very likely a damaging thing for humanity and our civil discourse and our ability to work together as a society. And they are realizing that they will make more money if they do the counterintuitive things of insisting that all of us listen to multiple viewpoints so it's not so easy to shield ourselves, and then they can sell more dish soap.
Yeah. And honestly, I think it's really interesting that they're going to have top-level talent. Anderson Cooper, Jorge Ramos, Shepard Smith. These are the top guys at these networks doing shows that are only on Facebook. I mean, it's a CNN-owned show on Facebook, but they're not taking a show from CNN and putting it on Facebook. They're saying, Anderson Cooper, we want you to do another hour of content just for Facebook.
This could be very, very huge. And I think it's a really good idea to make sure that you, get the perceived entire spectrum, if not the actual entire spectrum. But I think this is a good direction for them to go.
All right, let's look at some dispatches from the front.
So we got an email, Tom.
Yeah.
At first, I didn't expect much from this because it just said rental house fail on the subject line. But Matt had trouble watching what he wants, when he wants, or whatever device
you mean,
he pleases. It just rolls off the tongue. He writes, my wife and I had an evening without the kids, so we decided we should watch Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. I checked Vudu, Amazon, Google Play, iTunes. None of them had it to rent. And at this point, I'm thinking like, oh, I know how this story goes. You're going to say you don't want to own things, you want to rent them and so on. And then it says, sure, we could buy it for $15, but on principle, we decided to watch something else we missed recently in the theater. So we tried to find Spider-Man Homecoming, John Wick 2, Get Out, none of them available to rent. And again, I'm thinking like, is this going to be a whole thing about renting? And all of them were available at an outrageous $15 for the digital stream. Some were available to buy on Blu-ray for cheaper. And eventually, after much scrolling and disappointment, I remembered hearing good things about Game Night. We watched it and enjoyed it very much. And you might be tempted to say, well, that sucks to be you. But this is my reminder to the film industry that the only reason I don't download movies for free, aka piracy, is because they are easier to rent. The reason I don't torrent a high quality movie in 20 minutes is because they're easy to rent. The reason I don't, that I remove the torrent client from my computer is because the movies I wanted to watch were available to rent. Dear film industry, if you get greedy with windowing, I'll fight back with free. This is his words, not ours. Don't think that every $6 rental is a lost $15 sale. I rarely buy movies, and when I do, it's on Blu-ray that won't expire and is on sale at Target for $13, your boss, Matt Bat. This is, I thought, a really interesting take because we've talked about convenience trumps fidelity, and I'm sad to report that oftentimes, still to this day, the highest fidelity experience is oftentimes a pirated movie because it removes extraneous garbage that you don't want, like the FBI warning. And
that really stuff. Wouldn't be true in these cases, but all right, keep going.
But we settle for a stream version that maybe has a bunch of leader crap that we get through because it's so convenient. So I thought this was a really interesting take to check back in on something that thankfully we haven't talked about in a long time.
Well, it's interesting because the windowing hasn't changed. That's what Matt is responding to. Like, you also can't rent any of those movies when they were in theaters for the first 90 days.
Sure.
Right? You might have been able to torrent them. Is that fair? Right?
So
that's a window, right? I'm just taking the other side of this, right? And we always had a delay between on sale and rental.
Sure.
There were agreements with Blockbuster and others like, we want a time period where we can sell it only to the people who really want to own it, and really encourage that. And then we'll let rentals happen. And they're mimicking that with that. And to be honest, it's a free market situation where they're like, hey, if you want to be first to get it, if you want to watch it right now, is it worth $15 or is it worth you saving $11 and paying $4 to wait a couple weeks?
Right. Yeah. Fair enough.
All right. Let's get down to David, who says, hello, Tom, Brian, and anyone else that is there. That would be Bryce. Says, just a heads up, Babylon 5 now available to stream on Amazon Prime Video. Video is in SD quality because of the time, because of the 90s, but still viewable.
Yeah, a lot of people were voting for Babylon 5, so I figured that would be of reference or of interest to them. Meanwhile, Jalen Jade writes in, Jeff says, actually, your statements that the charging different prices based on the card that you're paying with is illegal. And I was like, wait, what statements did we make? But then I realized, oh, wait, this is about the MoviePass thing. It says you must treat all forms of payment as the same kind of payment. MasterCard could go after AMC for this practice. Amex has had to fight the same battle in the past.
Okay. So I'm not saying Jeff's wrong about there might be some card agreements that and things that he's absolutely right about. It is not illegal to discriminate on payments.
Well,
you can say, I don't want to accept this credit card, right? You can say, I want to discriminate on payments. In fact, I couldn't pay my rent in cash in Virginia. So the way he said it is not true. I think what he's saying is MasterCard has a policy, and we've actually talked about this on the show, that says if it's got the MasterCard logo, you have to take it. And there may be an exception in the case we were talking about where it was like, but if there's this system in place, we can deny it. Because there are times when they could deny your credit card for various reasons, right? So I'm just saying, not that Jeff's wrong, but it's easy to go like, you can't do that. But if they are doing it and MoviePass isn't suing them, maybe there's something else going on.
So, to clarify, I'm going to guess it's not so much an illegal thing. I would say it is a violation of the terms of service. For example, I do believe that when somebody signs up and does a merchant service account to accept credit cards, you are not allowed to just pass on that 3% fee on there. So instead, what I have encountered is you go to a gas station.
Minimum payment.
What they say is we do a discount for cash. It's not an extra fee.
Or they'll say, like, it has to be a $10 purchase for credit card.
Correct.
They can do that.
Right.
I guess what I'm saying is, I've seen this ping pong match in so many of these kinds of emails, and I haven't had time to research this one, but it usually ends up being, no, it doesn't sound like they should be able to do that. But in this case, there was this exception happening, which is why they're doing it. So I just don't know what that exception is.
Part of the reason I'm so excited about this is because the very next email was a boots on the ground experience of exactly this situation. Check it out.
So Robert writes and says, I wanted to write in with my experience at Pacific Theaters. After trying to complete my transaction on two different kiosks with a MoviePass card with unresponsive touchscreens, I went to the counter to buy my ticket. The person behind the counter rung me up, and then I handed him my MoviePass. He informed me that he is not able to complete the sale and I should use the kiosk. I told him the problem and then politely asked him to run the sale, but he insisted it would not go through his point of sale terminal. So I called him out on it and demanded he accept my card to complete the transaction. One MasterCard is as good as any, right? After a little back and forth, he humored me and attempted to run the charge. Just as he warned me, the sale did not go through. I didn't actually see what was on the screen, but I saw him swipe my card. Somehow, the point of sale system at Pacific Theaters can identify MoviePass out of any other MasterCard and deny the sale.
There's a lot of different ways to interpret what is happening there. There's the possibility that that number one, everything is presented and it's all true and somehow allowed under MasterCard's, you know, subsection 273.
Right. Maybe that terminal isn't compatible with the way with the way the charge has to be sent to work with the MoviePass credit limit.
Right.
Right. That it might, because there are different rules for Visa cash cards.
Sure.
Where you can't always use them in every terminal.
I tend to think of things through a set of soft skills where officially whatever Pacific Movie Theaters, you know, officially they're like, yeah, we accept all forms of payment. But man, a lot can happen unofficially. And a manager could tell a person like, hey man, look, if you see this, this is bad for us.
I would go with that. Until he runs it through the card. Now, granted, there might be some sleight of hand where he didn't really run it through the card. He made it look like he did, But if he ran it through the point of sale terminal and it just didn't work.
Well, or and then there's the real possibility that it's like against the terms of service with the agreement that Pacific Theaters has with MasterCard. They're like, yes, we know this is a violation of MasterCard. If it ever blows up in our face, we will deal with that down the road. But for now, let's just put some code in there that as soon as it identifies.
I don't think it works like that, but.
Yeah, you don't think so?
No, the point of sale terminals are much more.
Yeah, they're pretty simple.
Yeah,
but like I don't know if you were gonna play pure speculation. If you're gonna place a bet, what do you think is happening?
I think there is the credit card system is so complex and has so many exceptions. I think AMC found one that they can rely on to make it harder for MoviePass to work.
And because
and that it's
found
not
it Pacific,
a violation of the terms of service necessarily.
Are you talking about Pacific Theaters, this case?
Yeah. Oh, well, I said AMC, but yeah, in this case, the theaters. The theaters in general are finding like, well, they won't work on these terminals, so we could accept them in this way, but we know they won't work here, and yeah.
Awesome.
That would be my guess. I don't know. And then Amar Payton said, it seems like Disney no longer has a long-term plan for ESPN3. I tried to watch the NBA Finals through a browser, and while I was able to do so via ESPN3, what I found interesting was that the page ESPN3.com is actually dead now. I used to use it all the time to watch ESPN3 content. I would assume this means ESPN3 won't be around in the long run. No, it's been replaced by ESPN+.
Yeah. Meanwhile, the shutting down, like the fact that it doesn't redirect, it doesn't take you to a place, doesn't tell you to sign up for ESPN+, the fact that you go to ESPN3.com and it's just like double middle fingers to you is shocking to me.
Yeah, that's just bad website. Yeah, you redirect ESPN3.com to ESPN+. ESPN, or come on, literally anything. Yeah.
I mean, or go to domain.com, use promo code SCAMSCHOOL, get 15% off.
Yeah, you could do that too.
grab that domain.
No, I think the domain probably is still owned. They're just not sending it anywhere, which
that's
is
weird.
A waste.
Yeah,
why would you do that? All right. Thank you, everybody, for joining us today on Cord Killers. Brian, it was really nice to have you.
Dude, it's good to be in studio, man.
This is pretty cool. Yeah. Our website is cordkillers.com. Our email address is cordkillers@gmail.com. We're live on twitch.tv/nightattack and carried on diamondclub.tv through that Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. We'll see you next week to cut your cords.
Hey, guys. Brian and Tom here, and it's just the same old message at the end of the credits, just like always.
That's right, Brian. Nothing new here except your name showing up.
Oh, my gosh.
Because
I've got a name.
You just supported us on Patreon.
Yeah, all those $5 donors. Look at that. That's your name in pixels. We're going to make you famous, kid. Put your
name
in pixels on the internet.
There's some classic names in there. But some of you are new. Some of you aren't there. It's sad. What can they do, Brian?
I mean, they could go to patreon.com/cordkillers and pledge $5 an episode and be one of these amazing people. Like this one. Oh, look at that name right there.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.